I got, well, notice, several emails this week, notices about some things that had happened in the environmental world and Illinois. Now, the first that you should know about is actually kind of the bad news, because, you know, I've been talking on the show about the open pit sand mine at Starved Rock State Park. Got a notice from Tracy Yang at the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club and Elliot Brinkman with the Prairie Rivers Network to say that the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, Office of Mines and Minerals, approved phase one of the Starved Rock Mine on Tuesday, November 13th. I'll read very briefly from a release they sent out. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources Office of Mines and Minerals has given the go-ahead to a controversial open-pit mine next to Starved Rock State Park in LaSalle County, despite objections from local residents and thousands of Illinois residents, including yours truly. Starved Rock is one of Illinois' most special places, and we are disappointed that IDNR is approving a project that puts it at risk, said Jack Darren, director of the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. And here's the one ray of hope. An additional permit from the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency is still needed to allow the release of wastewater from sand processing. The agency has not yet made a decision whether to allow the new discharge. That's why we had that petition last week that I urged you to sign. Somebody wrote to me and said, do you know how many signatures ended up on it? Truthfully, no, I don't. Maybe somebody from the Sierra Club is listening. Maybe Cindy Scruckrude, maybe she's listening. She could call and tell me. I don't know how many signatures got on that ultimately. But I hope thousands and thousands and thousands. Anyway, the agency has not yet made a decision whether to allow the new discharge. Wastewater from the mine would be dumped in Horseshoe Creek, which runs from the mine site into Starved Rock State Park. So this is the bad news. I mean, and I've been telling you this for months. It's moving forward. You know, IDNR is hopeless. IDNR just seems hopeless. They are trying to serve two masters. They're trying to facilitate the sale of natural resources. And at the same time, and I'm using air quotes here, protect our natural resources. You can't do both. And it's just sad that they're allowing this to just kind of go through. It's sad that the county of LaSalle has turned the whole county into an open pit sand mine, because I got an email from that way. And I'm not even going to say who wrote this. I've been copied on this. It's official. This email came to me just the other day from some folks living in LaSalle. It's official. The above company has petitioned, I guess it's Quality Sand Products. I can tell you that. Quality Sand Products has petitioned the city of LaSalle for a special zoning permit to mine 120 acres north of Utica at I-80 near Pioneer Seed Company and Hickory Hollow Campground. Well, that'll be good for the kids. Just received this news on Wednesday, but didn't want to spoil your Thanksgiving. Have you driven out to the Osage Curve on Route 6? It's a war zone. I'm reading this from an email that went out to a bunch of people. It's a war zone. The village of Utica and the sand company have thrust themselves upon the environment of 62 families now in litigation to protect the quiet rural lifestyle they had chosen. Absolutely criminal. And they have no recourse, which angers me. This is the third mine. I'm still reading from the email. This is the third mine project in a year. And the expansion of Fairmont Minerals in Wedron, this is insane. I hope the farmers stand up for their zoning ordinance and don't sell out to these mining companies. It seems they have the cart before the horse. Before a man can work, he has to eat. Praying for some common sense. And this is one of the signs off the person who wrote this to me. And I want to thank you for copying me on these emails. I look at them. I don't always have a chance to bring them up on the air, but I do look at them. So anybody else who's part of this communication, please copy me. I want to know what's going on there. So it's a war zone, says this person in Utica. They're putting sand mines all over the place there. And they're there I probably will be one next to Star of Rock State Park. Okay, that's the bad news. Then there was good news. And the good news comes from Joe Davies County in the west side of Illinois, where for 5 years, various groups, including Homes, which is helping others maintain environmental standards, Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water, Prairie Rivers Network, and others, have been working against a mega dairy that was already under construction. If you go to my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, go to the homepage. I got pictures of purple water. Purple water.
That's not natural.
No. That was draining into the lakes and streams in the area. You know, let's just do this. Let's bring in Matthew Alschuler. Matthew, good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have you on the show. Matthew is with the group I just mentioned, Homes, helping others maintain environmental standards. First of all, congratulations. It sounds like it's a great victory for the citizens of Joe Davies County.
Thank you. It is a victory. And, you know, to hear you talk about what happened at Star Rock, it's exactly the same thing. You have an organization that serves two masters. We have the same people helping us with the Sierra Club and Prairie Rivers. And the people in the area feel helpless because we're keep being told that our vote doesn't count and our voice doesn't matter.
You know, but here's the difference. And I was struck by it as I was putting this together and researching it. In LaSalle County, the board okayed the sand mine, all right? Said, all right, we need this money, although they're not really going to get any money. We need the jobs, although there's just very, very few jobs, and they won't last. But the board approved it. In your case, your board did not, and yet you ended up with this mega dairy anyway. So it seems not to matter whether the citizens have a say or not, whether they should talk to their elected representatives or not, because whether they do or not, these things are going to end up in their communities.
You're right. We do not have local control when it comes to agriculture. There are other things where if the county board or your municipality, your mayor, whatever, town board votes things down, they have the power to change it. But in Illinois and unfortunately some other Midwest states, big agriculture got the legislature over the last 10, 12 years to put things in saying essentially, you know, these big facilities, they're just too complicated for the local people to be able to properly monitor. What we'll do is we'll move all the permitting to Springfield, to the head, you know, to the, or whatever the capital city happens to be of the other states. And then they say in very tiny print, oh, and we'll only make the vote of the county board as advisory, not binding.
Okay, so why that's so interesting, because, you know, and it must be the difference between ag and other kinds of industry, because what I've been told about what happened in LaSalle County is, well, the boards voted and really, you know, those of us in state government don't want to get involved because it's a local decision. Well, in your case, your local decision is only advisory.
Correct.
So it's a lose-lose situation. Heads I win, tails you lose. Let's move on. We're putting in the mega dairy. We're putting in an open pit sand mine. Sorry. You know, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya.
Right. And the Illinois Department of Agriculture, which, like the DNR, is serving two masters, are they really there to protect us or are they there just to promote agriculture? They have never denied a permit based on the vote of the county board or a municipality. So it doesn't matter. They've always overridden a no vote.
So you're saying that the Department of Ag in the state of Illinois basically has carte blanche to do whatever they want?
Correct, because once land is designated agricultural, the county loses any control over it. They could stop a sand mine, and they could stop a industrial facility, but they cannot stop an agricultural facility.
So it depends on the organization you're working for. So you got the, in terms of ag, the Department of Agriculture, who's approving everything within sight, and then than the other. But it's, and it's really a different problem. And we're talking apples and oranges here with the IDNR, which, as I mentioned earlier, is trying to have it both ways. They claim to be protecting our natural resources while at the same time facilitating sale of the natural resources. I don't know how that happens. But it's embarrassing, is what it is for a state agency. All right, I want to bring in also Daniel Diamond, who was on the show at the end of September when we were talking about CAFOs, concentrated animal feeding operations, and Daniel was a part of that conversation. Daniel, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me again.
And I should say Danielle, not Daniel. Danielle. And, okay, both of you, you were involved in this battle against the CAFO in Joe Davies, right?
Yes, our organization worked hand-in-hand with Holmes, trying to get the environmental laws that are on the books enforced against this facility. And I just want to add one thing to what Matthew said about the Department of Agriculture having all the power in the state to regulate over agricultural lands. In this particular case, these facilities, concentrated animal feeding operations, are not agricultural operations in the sense of the word. They're industrial production facilities, and they should be zoned in industrial areas, not in agricultural areas. But the Department of Agriculture has a set of regulations called the Livestock Management Facilities Act, where it gives them complete authority to site where concentrated animal feeding operations are located. And so it goes beyond just having authority over agricultural lands, but it's these industrial facilities that the Department of Agriculture has complete power over in making decisions about where they are located in local communities.
And I want to get this story out. There's so much to it. We're not going to have enough time to get to everything here. But I mentioned Purple Water, which kind of was the undoing of this facility. And that's, and you got to understand, folks, they started building this facility. There are no cattle there yet. This is not, even though it was supposed to be a mega dairy, none of those animals are even on the property. The leachate came from grain they had stored on the facility. It was fermenting corn silage. And I think what happened here, Matthew, is that the owner, who just assumed he's never going to get kicked off of here, everything's going to go his way, he got lazy. And from what I understand, having researched this before, AJ Boz is the name of the company. I'm searching for words here.
They overapplied. They overapplied.
Yeah, well, they overapplied the stuff to the fields, and it leaked into the water. Give me the 5-second tour from start to finish, Matthew, of how this all came about. We know that the county voted not to have this in here. What happened after that?
I'll give you the quick overview of everything. In very late 07, a bunch of my neighbors all received what is called a notice of intent to construct from the Department of Agriculture saying, by the way, we're going to be building, A.J. Boss is going to be building two 5,500-head facilities a quarter mile apart right outside the small town of Nora, Illinois. And that's about all, is that they have to notify you that they're building these facilities. And that's what got everyone started. And everyone started calling around and making a lot of noise and contacting the county board. And the county board said to the Department of Agriculture, we want a public hearing. And so in January of 08, there was a public hearing in the middle of winter at the local high school. And 500 people showed up. And a lot of them were there till midnight listening to the presentation of how this facility, these two facilities, were going to work. And there was right away a lot of people opposed to this facility, and a number of whom obviously lived right near the facility who received these notices, and a lot of whom are farmers who've been here for multiple generations. Everyone assumes, of course, it's city people who moved out to the country. They don't know what manure smells like, and they don't realize, no, these are farmers who've lived there, some of them since 1840 on the same land, who said, we can't live next to a facility like this. We're going to lose our clean water, our clean air. Our retirement is tied up in this farm. You can't just, when you're a farmer, it's not easy to change jobs. You live on your work. You know, you can't just go and get another job. And it's not easy to move. So they got the notice of intent. Everyone contacted the county board after the public hearing, and the county board in January said 11-5, no, we don't think this facility met the guidelines that we were given by the Department of Ag to build this facility. And their main concern was pollution to our groundwater. And they based this on a conversation, well, on more than a conversation, but on research that they were given by the Illinois State Geological Survey, who essentially said, you're up in northwest Illinois. That area was never glaciated. You have very, very thin topsoil, 5 to 10 feet in many places. And under the topsoil is bedrock, but not like nice solid granite. It's all fractured. It's got cracks everywhere. And that if this facility comes in and they start putting the manure they're going to generate all over your fields, they're going to go through that shallow ground soil, into the bedrock, and then straight through those cracks into your wells.
And let me interrupt for a second. That facility is also the headwaters of a stream in your area, right?
And it's actually the headwaters of a stream because it's spring fed. The stream starts on site. Well, where does the water come from? It comes from underground through those fractures. And so if there's a straw coming up with water coming out, there's also straws going down that can let pollution go down. It works both ways. And yes, there was a stream, there was a spring-fed stream right on site that they wanted to build one of their two 14-acre manure ponds on top of. And that got the interest of the Army Corps of Engineers, who said, that's a wetland. You can't build there without getting a permit from the Illinois EPA. And so after the county board voted no, and after everyone complained about this, and we thought that the Department of Agriculture would say, well, hey, this is in a sensitive area. According to our regulations and these other experts from like the Illinois State Geological Survey, this is a bad area to locate it. We shouldn't give the permit. But they gave the permit anyhow.
And the guy started building, right?
They gave the permit at the very end of May of 08, and a few days later, he had earth movers on site, and he was building. At the same time, we filed a lawsuit to the judge, and we said, we want you to stop him from building, because once he gets building, he'll say, hey, I spent all this money. And the judge says, I won't stop it. I will start a trial to see if we should stop it. And then he said to the lawyers for AJ Boss, you understand, if you build, it's at your own risk, because you are on a trial to see if I'm going to stop this or not. But the trial kept getting stalled and delayed, and they kept bringing more experts. And it took until October, even though we filed the very beginning of June, it took until October for the judge to stop the facility, by which point in time he had already spent millions on the ground, tore up dozens and dozens of acres of land, started to dig these ponds, and, as you mentioned, harvested all of the silage because he was so cocky, he figured, I'm going to be operational next March. I got to get the food here ready for my cows.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even have that permit. He didn't have that permit from the EPA that the Department of the Army Corps asked for. He did not have that permit at that time. So separate from our lawsuit, he wasn't legal to finish the facility.
All right. Let's pause right there. I got to take care of some business. I'm talking to Matthew Altshuler from Homes, Helping Others Maintain Environmental Standards. Danielle Diamond from Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water. We don't have too much time here, Matthew, but let's sort of pick up the story. And how did things begin to turn against? I'll tell you what, Danielle, maybe you want to address that. How, because you were involved in the litigation in this, how did things begin to turn against this facility that had already begun to be constructed?
Well, as Matthew mentioned, the facility began construction despite the litigation, which on a local level, I wasn't involved so much in that case aside from helping write an amicus brief to the Illinois Supreme Court eventually. But I think the table started to turn when the public got really involved in trying to ensure that the environmental regulations administered by the Illinois EPA be enforced against this facility. Matthew mentioned an Army Corps permit that the facility needed to build one of its waste ponds over a stream, which I will mention that stream leads to the Apple River Canyon State Park, one of the most, one of a handful of just a few biologically diverse waterways in the state. But there was the issue with the manure pond, but also citizens began arguing that the facility should have a Clean Water Act discharge permit, which those permits are designed to control the amount of pollution that gets discharged into streams from these operations. And, you know, I think we need to mention that this facility, as I noted before, is an industrial facility. They confine thousands of animals in one place, and they produce millions of gallons of waste. And the reason why they pose a risk to water pollution is oftentimes there's not enough land in the area to distribute the waste evenly, and so it ends up running off into streams and rivers. And that was a major concern of the citizens of Joe Davies County, that aside from the fact that, you know, it got permitted in a bad location, one of its waste ponds was above a tributary leading to the Apple River, but just the operation and management of the facility would cause pollution had it not had one of these Clean Water Act discharge permits. The table started to turn when, with an extreme amount of public pressure on both the Illinois EPA and the U.S. EPA to evaluate the facility, even before it was fully constructed, to determine whether or not it should have one of these permits. The BOSS and Traditions, they argued that they shouldn't have to have one of those permits because it would not pollute. U.S. EPA came in and said, you know what, why don't you show us that, you know, this site is safe, that you're not going to discharge into the underlying aquifer leading to the streams. And the Traditions refused to comply with those information requests from U.S. EPA. In the meantime, you have citizens out there water monitoring, and they ultimately caught on multiple occasions the facility discharging from that silage leachate. And in the end, when the stream turned bright purple, there was no denying it was going to cause water pollution, and that's the Attorney General's office got involved, and you had this enforcement action trying to enforce the Clean Water Act, trying to get the facility to obtain one of these permits to control its pollution, and he refused to do it. And he refused to do the tests and the studies demanded by U.S. EPA, and I think at the end of the day, he couldn't meet his burden of proof to show that he wasn't going to pollute, and he didn't want to have to go through getting one of those permits because he probably couldn't meet the requirements of the Clean Water Act in the end. But I think ultimately it was the amount of public pressure and the citizens, you know, trying to get the agency to enforce the laws on the books that ultimately led to this decision that, you know, he decided to walk away.
Well, it's yeah, I was just going to say, it sounds like the Attorney General's office had quite a bit to do with this. And it sounds like it's a department that was actually fighting for the common people and the people who live in the area.
Yes. I mean, that much credit needs to be given to the Assistant Attorney General, Jane McBride, for negotiating this settlement agreement. The Attorney General's office actually weighed in early on when the Department of Agriculture was citing this facility, and they even argued this was an improper location for it. And I think we do have to commend the Attorney General's office for ultimately getting this this settlement agreement with Traditions. Had they not stuck to their guns on the enforcement of the Clean Water Act, I don't think we'd be where we are today.
The word is hubris that BOSS had, and I love the name BOSS. It's B-O-S. But you have Illinois and a boss coming in, and it kind of makes an ironic kind of sense. But these pictures you sent me, Matthew, are from 2 years ago, purple water. And you know, yep. It's amazing. You could have had this 2 years ago and still be fighting this fight.
Yeah. What happened is when we had the litigation, we had the burden of proof switched to us. We had to prove that it would discharge, and it's hard to prove that it will discharge. And the advantage that happened is once the Illinois EPA and U.S. EPA finally got involved, they essentially said to BOSS, you have to prove it won't discharge, and, hey, there's some tests you could do. And his engineers must have said to him, you know, you can't do these tests. We'll fail. That's because that's what all the experts were telling us. They actually tested the ground and they essentially do is they put colored dyes into the water and they see if it comes out anywhere. Well, you know, the purple discharge happened for a different reason. But if they had done that, if they had done those dye tracing tests, the experts we talked to said every spring and stream around there is going to turn color from those dyes, showing that if you spread something on the surface, it's going to go down into the groundwater, come out somewhere else in one of these springs.
Yeah, you know what? And you bring up a really good point, Matthew, which is this is all about the precautionary principle. The precautionary principle dictates that the onus is on the company to prove that they will not pollute. But in this case, it got flipped on its head, as it always does in America. That seems to be the way we run things in this country. The onus is on the citizens to prove that they are polluting. That's just insane.
Right.
Europe doesn't do this. The United States does this, and this is how we run our governments.
Yeah, and Mike, I will just add, in this case, for months, maybe years, the citizens, you know, were lobbying the Illinois EPA to come in and demand these tests and evaluate the facility, and they didn't require the tests. It was when the U.S. EPA got involved and the Department of Justice got involved, you know, from the federal government mandating these tests, that the tables did turn. But ultimately, it actually did pollute. It polluted. There was proof it polluted. There was no denying it. The stream turned bright purple. So it was, you know, the precautionary principle really didn't work in this case. It helped because of citizen pressure. Ultimately, you know, they caught it polluting and they, you know, US EPA got involved. But, you know, our laws, I mean, I think for the people that are trying to fight the sand mine, I mean, this is a tale of do not give up and continue to collect the evidence that you need to show what kind of problems these types of development projects are going to cause. And that, you know, you have to do that because even the Illinois EPA, which has the responsibility of ensuring that these facilities don't pollute, it basically had to get to the point where it was polluting until there was really severe action taken against the
facility. Yeah, you know, and that's a great way to wrap up. I mean, we could go into the nuances of this, and there's so much to this story. And I may have to have you back, both of you, on the show to go on this a little further. But you bring up so many good points. One, about the Illinois EPA, because right now they're the last hope for the people at Starved Rock. And considering they really didn't do their job out your way, that's not very encouraging. You know, I'm doing my naughty and nice list for the year since we're in the holiday mode, and I give IEPA naughty. I give DNR naughty. I give Department of Agriculture naughty at this point. And I'm just being kind. I could say worse things. But your other point is well taken too, Danielle and Matthew. You're proof of this, that you cannot give up. You have to fight till the last breath. You have to fight. You go to court. You petition to have hearings. You just work it over and over and over again. And it helps if they spill purple water into your lakes and streams, because then you've got something to show the powers that be.
It's public pressure, Mike.
Wait, hold on. Let Matthew go ahead. Sorry.
Sure. The thing is that the problem to start with is that corporations have too much control in state government. And the example in our case is that the law simply says Boss and Traditions Mega Dairy can just simply say, we will not pollute. That's all they have to do is say that. We will not pollute, therefore we are a zero discharge facility. And as long as they say that, they don't need a permit. They don't have to prove they won't. And the record of these facilities statewide, and Danielle can talk about that, is abysmal. Sooner or later, they might not pollute the first 5 years. Sooner or later, they're going to pollute. And that's what's happened up in Wisconsin, where there's a heck of a lot more of them than there are here. And dairies, I should say. And yet the state doesn't say, we know you guys pollute. To protect our water, why don't you get a discharge permit so we can monitor you to make sure that you're not leading up to a situation where you will pollute.
Yeah, and unfortunately, as you told me, because we talked earlier, the judge in this case even kind of took them at their word and said, okay, they say they're not going to pollute, so the burden is on the homeowners. Danielle, I'm going to let you have the last word here.
Well, I'd just like to say, you know, eventually the Illinois EPA came around. They stepped in the Illinois Attorney General's office. We thank very much US EPA. But I think this really can, this success can really be attributed to the public getting involved and staying on top of these agencies and, you know, collecting the evidence themselves. And if, you know, if there's any words of wisdom that I can give is, as you said, Mike, don't give up. The public needs to get involved in these fights. And with that amount of pressure, you know, you can have a success like this. And I think Holmes has done, you know, this is a true David and Goliath story, and Holmes has been able to show that with public involvement, citizen pressure, we can get the environmental laws on the books enforced, and that, you know, this is just one case, and hopefully this will set an example for other groups that are trying to protect their local communities to not give up the fight.
All right. Thank you both. Danielle Diamond from Illinois Citizens for Clean Air and Water and Matthew Altshuler from Holmes. Congratulations on your success. It was hard fought, but ultimately the right thing is going to happen. And let's hope it sets a precedent for the future. Take care and have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you, Mike.
You too, Mike. Thank you.
Bye-bye.